You know, we talk about weather manipulation. In the summer of 1930, George Ambrosius Emmanuel Morrison Sykes, yeah, that's his name, a self-professed minister and flat earther. His calculations put the sun's distance from Earth at 3,300 miles. No wonder it gets so hot out here sometimes. He was hired by the Westchester Racing Association to ensure good weather for the horse races at Belmont Park. As described by historian Clark C. Spence in The Rainmakers, the contract promised Sykes $1,000 for every dry day during a week in early September, but required him to pay back twice that for every wet one. Now, for 7 days, Sykes's device, which was a pile of wire, antenna, jars of colored water, old radio sets, a vase, an electric heater, and a toy propeller, was blessed by the sun. But the following Saturday, after his contract was extended, the rains came. And when Sykes, looking to outwit fate, promised more rain 2 days later, the appointed day instead passed dry. At press time, the National Weather Service was predicting a sunny July 4th in Boston with temperatures in the low 80s. Still, it would be nice to be sure, wouldn't it? 75 years after Doc Sykes' Belmont lucky streak ended in disgrace, the weather still resists best efforts at prediction, much less control. In a moment, we continue our discussion with Scott Stevens, weatherman, weathercaster, meteorologist on Coast to Coast AM. Scott, how do other meteorologists feel about your theories of weather manipulation?
Boy, they really don't want to talk about it.
Why? They agree with you or not?
After I have the time to sit down and show them what I'm accumulated, they're changed. They're truly changed. And I've had two guys in particular come back and say, Scott, you've ruined it for me, buddy. You've just ruined it for me. I can't look at the sky the same way anymore. And I don't know that I want that to happen with everybody, but I'll tell you, it makes forecasting. There's another element that we have to consider, or at least I have to consider, and others will soon, in forecasting tomorrow's weather. And that's just that we are not forecasting the natural processes of this planet any longer.
Are you a rebel meteorologist within your field?
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what they used to say about natives in their own specific countries who would do rain dances? Mm-hmm. And people asked, you know, how come it always works? And one guy once said, well, that's because they just never stop dancing. You know, they dance until it rains. That's why it works. And eventually it will.
Well, your guy in the Berkshire who is forecasting for Belmont Park should have stopped while he was ahead.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things you don't guarantee. You just don't guarantee. Well, the sun will come up tomorrow. We'll go that one. But even when the forecast looks obvious, they're just things happen now. I have read more forecast discussions out of Weather Service offices around this country, and it doesn't matter the time of year where they say conditions outside bear no resemblance to what the models are forecasting or what the models expect. And that is the foundation for all the forecasting, is the computer models. We use that guidance and then build the weather forecast from that.
Is the manipulation so prevalent that when you're ready to make forecasts and you make, let's say, a long-range forecast for me is 5 days, 7 days.
I don't go beyond five.
Okay. When you're doing that and it changes so dramatically, do you think it's because somebody altered it or because you just missed it? Come on now. Be honest.
It's altered. It 30-minute forecast is now just as hard as a 5-day one was, because these thunderstorms, they used to pop up and would continue, you know, and go for a while until they'd run out of gas. And now they're pulsing. They just develop, violently develop overhead. And sometimes they'll sit still while their brethren move around them.
People would get so upset in the Midwest, Scott, when St. Louis meteorologists would predict, let's say, 8 inches of snow. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, people make a run, right? They get the bread, the milk, all that stuff out of the stores. They do whatever they have to do. They're everywhere. Traffic jams are every place.
Oh, yeah.
And then they come back and you wake up the next morning, there's no snow at all.
Nothing happened.
How could they be off by that much?
And it is so hard to now go out on those big storms. I was on vacation this week, gratefully, but it was the first week of the year. And it became this impending storm, which was really a series of three moderate storms, became the storm of the century. Because if we would have gotten 8 inches of snow out of each event, that would have been a big event for the high desert. We ended up with really not much at all. Not much at all. And there was so much grief given because, I mean, the Weather Service ran with it and the media ran with it. And what happened is the storm ended up south. And it's very easy to kill a storm like that. What I then found and watched as the storm developed across the area is just large holes would open up in the cloud shield, which should have been responsible for 200-300-400 miles worth of snow. You would get these holes that would open up 80, 150, 200 miles in diameter, and literally the cloud was just shot. It was just let go. It's like popping a balloon. It just collapsed, and you end up with this hazy looking stuff that comes out of the sky as the cloud is just simply released. It's electrically released, and the moisture is let go, and that's when you begin to see the square cloud 180 miles down the road. Is that energy has to go somewhere.
Why is it that on some regions of the East, in Buffalo, for example, Boston, mm-hmm. they get hit with some of the biggest snowstorms? I mean, huge.
Well, the geography plays a big part in that, in that the weather can be simply turned on and that can happen. You draw the heat and the moisture off the lakes as long as they're not frozen over, and you can focus that in 2, 3, 4 mile wide spans. You know, and it's no different whether you spin up a tornado with a severe thunderstorm. It's just a small scale event, and those are easier to handle than sometimes the larger ones are.
More and more people, Scott, are moving to Las Vegas. It's a desert.
Got to drink.
They're going to run out of water eventually. What's going on in there? What do you think?
And they're building like gangbusters, or at least they were. If that
they still are. They're trying to curtail it, but they haven't put the brakes on yet.
Well. That was probably the Fed's responsibility. That's going to be an issue. I mean, if we slip back into this long-term drought that the Southwest and indeed much of the West had been in throughout the first half of this decade, they're going to want to buy water. Somebody had told me that they're trying to buy it from Utah, from northern Utah. And so then you've got to logistically try to move that water.
Wow, but the farmers want it.
No,
the cattle ranchers.
Here, there's no way they're going to give it up.
No.
You know, for what? A few green lawns and so people can flush the toilet. So while, farmland then sits empty, it's silly. It's just silly. It's a function of sustainability.
I have a guest who comes on every once in a while. He has written a book called The Coming Ice Age. His name's Robert Felix. He truly believes we are in one now. Do you go that far?
I think an ice age... I hope we get that far. I hope the sun lets us get that far.
Not by fire, but by ice is the first hit.
I really think that's eventually what will happen is that the ocean currents, which are already slowing and slowing dramatically, these returned rivers of frigid North Atlantic water flowing down from the bottom of the continental shelves off of Iceland and Greenland and Scandinavia, they used to be able to calibrate sub-instrumentation because of the consistency of temperature and water at certain depths. And now those massive rivers of returned cold water have slowed down, and in case some of these canyons, the flow is backed up. And the process has begun. It's simply begun. In the winter of 97-98, the shape of the Earth changed. It had been going through what's called or termed the post-glacial rebound. The weight of the ice caps gave the Earth a squat look, and as we melted and melted over the past 10,000 years, we became more round.
That's interesting.
And taller.
And when they eventually go away, and they probably will, what will happen?
Well, what's happened is over that winter, 7-8 years ago, is that process reversed itself, And now we're getting, the Earth's equator is getting wider again, even as the poles are melting. So what's happening is that there's a collection of water or something even below the crust collecting around the equator. And that may simply be these ocean currents, as that water is not returning at typical speeds along the Gulf Stream. So that's another one part of this big, big clue. And that flags have got to be up. And I know Woods Hole Institute in Massachusetts is just at the leading edge of this. I mean, and they've been brave in saying these things are possible, rather than the head in the sand issue that, no, there is no global warming. I'm sorry, this planet has a fever. This planet has a fever. And when you're sick, you go through periods of shivers and sweats. Every living thing does.
Who else has this technology, Scott?
Well, we could, I think we're to the former Soviet Union, leased by some Japanese business interests. The U.S. certainly has it. Brazil and Israel. And there are likely others that are playing with it. And some information has come along that China and India are in the game as well. So India, having dealt with monsoons and that being such an important part of their economy, is the return of the monsoon, that you'll spend the money to make sure the water shows up when it's supposed to.
Is this as dangerous as someone having a nuclear weapon?
Well, with think of a nuclear weapon. You can truly annihilate a small space, relatively speaking, to the size of the Earth. And then we all have to live with the fallout and radiation for a time afterwards. But this, in operation, is affecting all of us. So I think it's far more dangerous, because how you tune the transmitters, how you tune these interferometers, will determine whether you bring down a plane or turn on a thunderstorm. It's that versatile. It's that powerful. It has to be, people have to be aware that this is there, and it comes under public scrutiny.
Has to happen. Is it possible this is an agenda of globalists, of the Illuminati? I always ask that, because if anything is done on a global scale, I sometimes think this has a lot to do with it.
If that's the case, and I haven't decided which camp I'm in with that regards, you know, I'd like to think that it's still separate, because then that means we've got a chance. But if it is under one umbrella, then that also plays a little separately on how I view the chemtrail issue. But we go back to how the Soviet Union got the magnets and the supercomputers to spin this project up. And that happened with a foreign aid grant from Congress. And they weren't happy about it. And they started hearings, but they got nowhere. So that makes you think that there was a controlling power, the powers that be, that enabled this to develop as far as it did. And indeed, they may have had a thumb on this, since firstly, that they probably got the word that the Soviets had it, but then that they were going to make sure it was under their thumb, and hence the supercomputers and the magnets go over there to the former Soviet Union in 76 and 77. So it's been in place. We're coming up on 30 years.
Any idea whose bright idea this was a long time ago?
Boy, I don't know whether we want to put it on Tesla's doorstep.
Yeah, I think he just invented stuff. Somebody else had to say, let's start manipulating the weather.
I wish I'd thought of it.
Would you have done it?
But I wouldn't have been quiet about it. You know, and
all right, let's assume you have the technology to do it. Tell me, if you called a national news conference, what would you tell people in your opening remarks? Go ahead.
I would basically say that we have got a solution to many of our problems. We've got a solution, not a complete solution, to hunger, to floods, to droughts, and a way to mitigate the planet's warming. This is all possible with this technology. And that's the big issue, is that it has not been used for the public's good. And it's been slowly been turned on where you have these greater disasters as time has gone on from the mid-70s. But I get a daily summary of weather events that happen on August 17th or August 18th. And it's amazing how many of these big things happened since 1975.
What do you think the response would have been after this announcement you would have given us?
Tell us how. When does it start? Truly.
Do you think there would be panic? Do you think that they would be acceptable to this?
I think I couldn't tell you.
Because I'll tell you right now, if you did that today and said we're going to manipulate the weather, or we've been doing it, mm-hmm. I think the public would go crazy. Bonkers, they would not want this.
They would go crazy simply because they've been lied to for so long.
About everything.
Truly about everything. And the problem is, even with a denial from the government, they simply have no integrity to stand on. There's no integrity. And so how do you take anything they say seriously? You simply can't. You have to wait and see if there's been a change or if they follow on the word. But there's just no integrity there.
Does your field of meteorology also entail monitoring the polar shifts, the magnetic polar shifts?
No, that's the USGS.
Okay, so you don't get into that.
No.
Because that's changing too, Scott.
Oh, it is. It's drifting. And that pace of change is accelerating as well. George, there are so many things happening. And, you know, weather is just one of those zones that I'm interested in. Just one of them. I mean, it's not a function of one dimensionality. There's so many things happening.
What's going to happen in the next 5 years from now?
I think the evidence of this planet's warming will become irrefutable, and that those that deny it will be lumped in with flat earthers. The question is, how and why is it warming? I think there's a coincidental link between the CO2 relationships, but I really think a portion has to do with this technology, and probably more so it's a function of the sun and just the whole solar system going through these changes altogether. Earth is not separate. And I think that realization that we're all in these changes together will hopefully bring a little bit of unity to what is a world that seems to be coming apart at the seams from time.
You mentioned thousands of tornadoes last year in the Midwest. You were accurate. You said they're minimal now. They're playing around. We've had these incredible hurricanes lately. Tell me if you think we're playing around with those, trying to move them. They seem to be moving in certain areas. I had a guest on, James McCanny, who's convinced they're being moved to where the oil refineries are to screw up things in the Gulf to keep the prices high. I mean, that's how far this goes.
I think as our development and our experience with the HAARP array and whatever one we may have built underground that's in complement to it, because no doubt there's one that's for public consumption, and why build one when you can build two for twice the money? But we have arrays and we have technology that's coming online, and I honestly think that the hurricane issues will become, they'll still be big storms, but I think we're going to be able to deploy countermeasures to keep them from doing what happened last year. If this isn't all run by the elite, that's why I say if they do have their thumbs and can exert influence on the separate governments, then it becomes a much more serious game, even more so than it is. Because then all of it will work together for whatever end they want to achieve, rather than, you know, six guys sitting around with a BB gun shooting at a gopher hole, you know. But when you develop these weapons and add as much power to them as they have, then you're taking on the gopher hole with a howitzer, and you don't have a gopher hole when you're done, and that's on a planet.
When we come back, Scott, we're quickly at the half here. I want to talk about this being used as a weapon, if we can, get your take on that. It is simply amazing. Your website, weatherwars.info, is that correct?
Weatherwars.info.
Okay, very good.
Got some cool video up there, too.
So. All right, great. We've got some things on the website. Go ahead and take a look at some of the things Scott has provided us. Also, take a look at the video sent to us that we have of some kayakers who are out there, and they've got some video of water spouts. Huge. Just take a look at that. Back in a moment. And with our guest, Scott Stevens, at the top of the hour, we'll open up the phone lines for you. And I will open up a special line for whistleblowers, those of you who might know Who's manipulating? Maybe you're working for these companies. Maybe you're working for the government. Who knows? But I want to check in and give you an opportunity to cleanse your soul. We'll be back in a moment. Okay, Scott Stevens, you're the rebel weathercaster, the meteorologist. You might as well go out on a limb. Let's assume for a moment none of this was created for good purposes. They didn't want to bring rain to droughts and dry up spots that were too wet. Let's assume they wanted to ruin other countries, and everything has gone crazy now, and they can't stop it. Maybe they've even stopped the projects. They just can't stop it anymore.
Yeah, that would be nice to think, but pretty much what we've had over the last 25 years is its use as a weapon.
Yes.
I mean, we've had the
Russians beaming us, we beaming the Russians, Chinese all over the place, that kind of thing?
That kind of thing. You know, and we didn't get wind of this. We may have had inklings of what was happening, but it's certainly not the big picture until the mid-80s, when the top of the Reagan administration was briefed in 84. And it probably took a couple of other experiences before they realized, oh my goodness, we have a war and have been involved in a war and have just had pot shots taken at us. Some of them have been sucker punches for quite some time. And they needed to understand the technology, develop it, and figure out and deploy countermeasures.
Well, we know HAARP, talking to Nick Begich. We know it wasn't built for sending audio to people, special technology. I mean, there's got to be another reason. And to me, it's, shooting these electromagnetic pulses into the air, into the atmosphere, bouncing them down. It's got to be weather manipulation as a weapon.
That's a very healthy portion of probably why it was developed in the first place. And so quickly and aggressively so when they decided that we had to go do it. And there we are back into the late 80s, early 90s time frame, again, after the briefing in the middle 80s for Reagan. And it's been that long that they have been aware of it and couldn't have easily. They don't tell us all they should, but could have shared with some people what was going on. But still, within the bulk of the National Weather Service, they don't know.
Do you think that this kind of manipulation is one of the reasons why the poles are melting, why Greenland is melting? And then tell us, Scott, as a meteorologist, what happens when those poles melt?
Ooh, well, we flood those Arctic currents with fresh water, upsetting the salinity, that balance of that ocean. The North Atlantic thrives on the cold winters, and that cold water return sinking to the bottom of the North Atlantic. After having 20, 30, 40, 50 below air blow off the Canadian and Greenland as well, and then that moisture is removed from the top of the ocean, increasing the salt content. And once that temperature reaches about 35 degrees, salt water reaches its greatest density. And then, you know, square miles of this salt water will then literally begin to slowly submerge itself. And as it drops to the bottom of the ocean, warm Gulf Stream water comes up and replaces, and the process is continual. When you change that salt water balance, you change that whole of the ocean current cycle. And that's one of the things that is happening with the global warming. And this is, you increase the electromagnetic energy, the energy within the whole Earth system, then you begin to heat those poles of this magnet called Earth through a process called induction. If you plug in an outlet, plug in a wire, and then draw current through it, the cord is going to warm. That's induction. And so that may be one of the reasons why we have glaciers sliding and slipping, and the warmth in the poles is that not only is the atmosphere warming, but then that the crust of the planet is warming as well via induction. So there are many things happening all together, and we're trying to make sense of them, trying to figure out what is natural, what is not natural, so we can get a relatively good guess or an estimate on where we're headed 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now.
Do you think we're just beginning to see just the tip of the iceberg, so to speak?
hope there's a lot. What icebergs sit about, what, 90% below the water?
Yeah.
If that's the problems we've got coming up, then probably we're just.
And then we have some big problems.
Well, see, there are so many people that just deny there's any issue at all, and we'll just keep going on merrily so. And that's going to sink us. These people cannot speak for us. This planet is shared by all of us, and we must. You know, there's enough here for abundance for everyone. But there is luxury for a few, and that takes from so many. When you have, 80% of the wealth focused in a fraction of 1%, there's going to be a lot of people go hungry.
I predict, Scott, there will be major wars over water.
That's been the buzz. That truly has been the buzz. So if they can control where it rains, then we're guaranteed to have wars over water.
Yes.
Guaranteed. It will happen.
Let me ask you a meteorology question about rain, too, because when, you know, a lot of the rain, of course, comes from the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't the rain that falls then salty? Is it because the salt just is heavier and it stays, or why?
It doesn't get evaporated. You lose as we go through the water cycle, as we change that fluid from a fluid into a gas. The salt does get left behind, and it's that case.
So we're lucky on that end.
Yeah, we are lucky. Otherwise, there'll be vast. Well, what we'd have to do is have vegetation adjust to greater salt content in the soils.
Oh, and there's just probably no way that would happen. You know, it's very possible. Had we not had that kind of cycle, we wouldn't have life as we know it today.
Truly so.
Isn't that weird?
Look at Mars as an example.
Yes.
You know, it's life is very different there, obviously, if I believe it's there. I mean, it's just, come on. You know, and I think anywhere we look in the solar system, anywhere in this, I mean, the whole universe was tuned for life, for goodness sakes.
It is amazing how it's got so much order to it. I mean, little things. Who would think of, when you're planning something, who would say, all right, we're going to put salt in the oceans, but we need to make sure that living beings can drink water, and the only way they're going to get it is by a lot of rain, and so therefore we've got to leave the salt behind when the water evaporates from these oceans and drops down as rain on all these people.
And beyond that, there are entire ecosystems which need the salt present, i.e. the oceans, you know, plant and animal.
Yeah.
So it's developed with both environments. It's an incredible system.
Did you ever play heavy sports and you didn't have enough salt in your system? Cramp city.
Yeah, bad news. Bad news. It's an essential element. Very sad. So we're grateful for what we have.
Do you look at weather conditions beyond Earth? Do you look at solar flares and things like that?
I usually keep the SOHO side up. I usually do. Look to see what's going on at the sun.
Because if we get hit with some of these X flares,
we do.
Big ones, we could be in serious trouble. We've been lucky on a few of them.
We have been lucky.
We've been glanced.
Whether it's the charged mass missing Earth, or it's been aligned properly with our magnetic system, that it hasn't set off all the alarms and caused the problems that it could have, we've been fortunate. But again, that's another 1 in 500, a 150, 1 in 5. And as the sun continues to evolve, I think the odds continue to change. And there's a lot of attention paid to the sun. A lot of attention.
Do you ever get the knocks on the door by men in black? Saying, Scott,
no,
stop.
No, because I think there's a portion of that group that is anxious for this to happen, that is anxious for this to be out and open, and part of it that control will be maintained at all cost. I mean, there's going to be dissension within those ranks. I've expected it, but how do you hide these misformed clouds? How do you hide the unusual weather? How do you hide the contrast?
Yeah, but why are you one of the few to see it or to point it out?
I'm just the first. There will be others. It's a lot easier to be second and third and fourth.
Are you getting calls from major scientific journals and magazines and things like that, Nature, New Scientist? Are they calling you saying, "Hey, Scott, I want to interview you for this"?
You know what I see is bits and pieces of stories that they cover. There was one in New Scientist that came this week talking about global warming and the issue of contrails. That if these planes, the story's premise was is that there are layers in the atmosphere where the moisture is found, and usually no more than 500 meters thick. So not all that thick, 1,500 feet. And if the planes would just change flight levels when they came across these areas of moisture, that the contrail production would be reduced. And so that's, and I'm thinking, well, there's a whole other aspect to this story, guys. But there has been some press, certainly not enough. I had a station out of Kansas City come out and do a piece, and it was on the Fox News feed in I think it was late April, early May, because it was part of the May sweeps for the station in KC. But and it aired in Cleveland. That shook out a few people that said, "I'm familiar with what's happened. I'm familiar with what's happened, and keep going, buddy. Keep going." So, you know, it's just more soldiers. We've all got our task to do, and this is just my task. When others decide to jump in behind and carry the banner and do some of the work, then fantastic. You know, it'll happen. It will happen. You know, you can keep the truth out of the light for only so long. You know, my feeling is that they expected that somebody would come forward and point out what is obvious to me to others and show them what is unusual in the sky and what to look for. And my question is this happening sooner or later than what they anticipated back in the 80s when the powers that be figured it out, or at least within our government? And I have to think they've gotten a free ride for 20-plus years. Right. 20 years they've been able to pull this stuff off, knowingly keeping the public in the dark. 20 years. And they've been able to keep it quiet. So, you know, I think they've gotten a free ride for quite a while.
Okay, so you keep your forecasts to about 5 days, but do you make a prediction for a season generally?
I don't dare anymore. I really don't dare. I just don't.
So you can't even say we're going to have a mild winter or a rough winter at this point?
No, not at all, because I don't have their playbook. If I had the playbook, it would be a lot easier to accomplish.
And what do you mean by playbook?
Of what the plan is for the season.
Aha, how they're going to seed and do whatever they manipulate.
Okay. How many storms? When will they show up? And what do they have to do with the jet stream across the far North Pacific to allow the hurricanes to develop in the tropical Atlantic?
All right, listen to this theory. You know, when 9/11 occurred, somebody, some group, some people shorted airline stocks and insurance stocks. And they made a lot of money, Scott.
Anonymously, too, I understand.
Well, I think the SEC knows who did it. They're not telling us.
Oh, you know they
and
know.
And I'm a little concerned about that.
Yeah.
So with that in hand, what if all of this, see, I always believe who profits, who benefits. If this manipulation is occurring, I agree with you it is. If it's being done and it started off as a weapon, and I believe with you it did, somebody somewhere has said, we got to make money doing this. So what if this plan then, this manipulation of weather, was based on affecting crops, good or bad, and they, of course, hedge their bets in the futures market?
You got it. And that's one of my contentions. And that's one of the reasons why on the site we talk about the Yakuza, who can afford to spend the billion-plus dollars annually to lease these weapons to affect their agenda. And affect crops. I mean, like, you know, you short the corn crop, you short those corn futures, or coffee, or sugar, or insurance companies, or oil. If you know there's storms, Ivan's going to park itself over the natural gas producing areas in the Northeast Gulf.
But you buy your oil futures because you know the price is going to go up. If you know you're going to have a drought in the Midwest, you know your corn crop is going to go up in price.
And you know, I've done private forecasting for pipeline companies. It's the same thing. They just want an edge ahead of everybody else, and one day's enough.
This is it, Scott. This has got to be the reason.
Well, I think it's the primary reason why the drought isn't a killer drought, that you still have to be able to, the bottom is reached in the market and it's got to work itself back up. You make money on the movement of the price. You don't make money on destroying something.
Does anybody do anything to help mankind anymore? I mean, where's that as a motivation?
That's why we're here. That's why we're here.
There are not a lot of us.
Not enough. There are... Yes and no.
I mean, I could imagine some clowns in an office saying, all right, tomorrow we're flipping the switch, we're going to turn on the machine, mm-hmm. and we're going to ruin the entire orange crop in Florida. We're going to make temperatures dip below freezing for 2 weeks. They're through. Buy these futures right now. So they sit on it, and they make billions.
Yep. And one of the toughest places now, obviously, other than the nation's breadbasket, Illinois and surrounding areas, but also the Western Canadian prairie provinces have had a wicked summer. They haven't had summer, essentially. Highs today, 45 to 55 degrees. And this has happened about three of the last 6 weeks. I mean, they're already far enough north that summer is short. But you cut out half of it. And it doesn't have to freeze or not. If you just keep these temperatures below the optimum growing level for these crops, then fall comes before they've had a chance to mature.
Well, I spent a year in Minneapolis from 78 to 79. And I'm telling you, I have never been so cold in all my life. Scott, it's not that way anymore. People call in, and it's not. It's those winters aren't what they used to be. We get calls from Alaska. You know that Husky race, the Iditarod? They had a few years ago, they had to delay it, move it from wherever it was, Anchorage.
This year.
Yeah,
this
year. The last couple of years, then, they've done that, where they didn't have enough snow.
Yep. It's changing. It's simply changing. What we have counted on, or what we used to call our climate, which is what we would expect the weather to be. The day-to-day weather is obviously just the weather, but climate is the climate shifting. And we move. Climate's kind of a moving target, because when you say, well, today we're supposed to be 87 degrees, that's normal. But this, what we call normal, changes every 10 years. What is normal for us now in this decade is the average of what had happened in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. When I started this, normal was in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And normals shift every 10 years.
Are we going to lose our coastlines?
I think, oh, man, George, I think there's greater risk of living there than there is inland. I really think there's much greater risk.
Edgar Cayce might have been right.
Yeah.
Hasn't been wrong too much, I'll tell you that.
I would love to retire to the Kona coast of the Big Island, you know, off to Hawaii, you know, 2,000-3,000 feet up above, just so the view is grand.
Sure, and that's when you'll get hit by a volcano.
You can't win for losing.
Stay with us. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll continue chatting with meteorologist Scott Stevens. His website is weatherwars.info. If you need to reach me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. It's that simple. And here's a special phone number for you whistleblowers who might be part of a government ops project manipulating the weather. Maybe you know that your company is making big money on futures because of this. That's 818-817-0021. 818-817-0021. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.